Participation in this call is by express written invitation of the AHA only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids and abets such unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law. Please disconnect from the call and log off the webinar if the AHA did not expressly invite your participation. Good day and welcome to the American Hospital Association Monterey County Prescribe Safe Initiative Community Hospital Foundation conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. However, the Q&A session at the end of the conference will not be recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Rebecca Chicky. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, operator, and welcome to all of you who are either joining us online or on the phone. It's my honor today to be hosting, along with Dr. Anthony Chavez, one of the AHA Executive Dialogue series on hospitals and healthcare systems' role in impacting the opiate crisis. As the operator indicated, we are going to learn today about Monterey County's Prescribe Safe Initiative via Montage Health in Monterey, California. For those of you on the line, if you had any difficulties getting the PowerPoint online, please know that you can also access it at the section's website at www.aha.org/psych, P-S-Y-C-H. Click on the name of today's webinar, and you will be taken there to the PowerPoint, as well as to Dr. Chavez's bio. I am not going to read his entire bio today, but I do want to thank him and call out his leadership role as a physician leader and his passion around healthcare advocacy. He is currently a member of the American Hospital Association Regional Policy Board in our Region 9, which is in the West Coast. He's also a member of AHA's Interoperability Advisory Group, as well as a member of the California Hospital Association Board of Trustees. So I thank him now for his time that he contributes to those boards, as well as the time that he will spend with us today. I just want to set the tone very briefly, and I know he will go further, but as those of you on the webinar know, everyday hospitals see the devastation caused by addiction, death, and overdose related to opioids. Recently, the Centers for Disease Control statistics indicated that there were almost 19,000 deaths involving prescription opioids in 2014, which equates to about 52 deaths each day. And according to SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, every day, over 1,000 people are treated in emergency departments for misusing prescription opioids. So clearly, we are in a time of crisis, and at this time, it's my honor to turn the webinar over to Dr. Chavez, Vice President, Enterprise Chief Medical Officer, Montage Health, Monterey, California, who will describe the Prescribe Safe Initiative. I encourage those of you on the line as he goes through the presentation to submit questions via the online tool, or for those of you who are joining us only by phone, we will have an opportunity for you to ask questions via the phone at the end of the presentation. Tony, please proceed.
Well, Rebecca, thank you very much for the introduction. And as you mentioned, I've had the honor of serving on the Regional Policy Board 9 of the American Hospital Association for the last 3.5 years. And I must say it's given me an opportunity, a firsthand view of the great work that the AHA does each and every day for hospitals in the United States. And so it's an honor to be here today to talk about what we're doing around the epidemic of prescription drug misuse, abuse, and diversion. I'm mindful of the fact that the introduction is really meant to portray me as an expert in the area of opiate misuse, abuse, and diversion, and I just want to say that I'm not. I'm a busy practicing physician, practicing administrative medicine in a moderate-sized healthcare delivery system, really trying to keep pace with the changing healthcare needs of our community and what our society expects of us as a community organization. So you're not going to hear a lot of statistics today, an encyclopedic review of the literature or a discussion of pathophysiology. The point of today's webinar is really how can you take home some of the things that we've done at Montage Health and implement them in your community. So hopefully by the end you'll recognize that this is an opportunity to move from the theoretical to very practical approaches that you can use to take action in your community tomorrow. And so as milestones in the presentation, we'll talk about who Montage Health is. We'll talk about the scope of the issues associated with prescription medication misuse, abuse, and diversion. We'll talk about what we chose to do in our community to assist with this issue, some of the outcomes that we've achieved to date, what our next steps are in our journey and what we've learned from other coalitions that have evolved and developed throughout California, certainly, and nationwide. And then lastly, some practical approaches that you could potentially do if you've not started your journey in this arena. So Montage Health, for those in California who might not recognize the name, it's a new name. We changed our name about a month and a half ago. You'll probably recognize us best by Community Hospital of the Monterey Peninsula, or CHOMP as it's known in California. It's a 250-bed tertiary facility in Monterey, serving the residents of Monterey County, which is about a population of 400,000 people. We also have affiliated with our organization, Peninsula Primary Care, which is a 32-physician, 13-specialty, multi-specialty physician group practicing at five sites on the peninsula of Monterey County. Community Health Innovations, which is a population health management organization that provides wellness services, disease management services, embedded care management services in patient-centered medical homes, and other services to approximately 60,000 residents in Monterey County. And then lastly, Aspire Health Plan, which is a new Medicare Advantage health plan in our community. I also want to start out by saying we're firm believers that we should learn from each other as organizations, and so many of the tools and resources that I may make a passing reference to as part of this presentation are available on our website, and so I've provided the web link. Obviously, feel free to download any of those elements that you think would be valuable for your community, resource tools or other materials. It's primarily provider oriented. It also provides some excellent links to other organizations who have developed coalitions in California who have a slightly different focus than we do. So between both the CHOMP website and some of those other websites in California, you could get a pretty comprehensive view of the kind of activities that are going on. So instead of talking about the literature and what the literature suggests, the problem to be theoretically around the United States, I want to provide you a test that you can apply in your community to determine if your valuable time and organizational effort really should be focused on this issue of misuse, abuse, and diversion of opioids and other medications. And it's a three-point test. It really starts with the first element, which is how much time and attention is given to this issue at both a national level, you know, what is your community likely reading, what are your board members likely reading about this issue, and are they likely to turn to you and say, we have that problem in our community as well, And secondly, how are regulators spending their time with regards to this issue? The second measure has to do with a walk around your emergency department, and we'll talk more about that. And then lastly, what we like to call the street cred test. Find out what's actually happening in your community. But I want to go back to the issue of time and attention. And I think if you were to Google and the issue of the opiate crisis or any number of ways that you could Google information about this issue, you would find that organizations like the Boston Globe, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, NPR, PBS, Huffington Post, and Politico have recently published a great deal of information about the evolving recognition that, in fact, opiates are a serious problem in our country, whether illicit or as a result of a physician prescription, that the issue is significant and widespread throughout the United States. It's likely that your board members and other community members are also looking at this issue and will ask the question, what is our healthcare delivery system doing in our community? Regulators and administration is certainly spending a great deal of time on this. President Obama obviously made a nod to this issue as part of the State of the Union address. And as recently as a couple of weeks ago, House Speaker Paul Ryan declared fighting opiate addiction a top priority for his chamber over the next few months. And so, in fact, there are a number of activities at the level of Health and Human Services, as well as the FDA, the CDC, and other initiatives that have been launched to begin to address this issue and to provide guidance for the industry. From the standpoint of the emergency department test, it's pretty simple. I suggest you spend an hour and you ask five key stakeholders one simple question. Is drug seeking for controlled prescription medications a problem in our emergency room and in our community? And I'd like you to ask an emergency physician, an ED nurse, primary care physician in your community, somebody who runs your security or is involved in security in your emergency department. And most of us have a police officer from our community that's the walking through sooner or later. Ask them their perception of this issue of medication abuse in your community. I think what you'll find is that if you put an hour aside, chances are you're going to be there for a couple hours because it's one of those issues that ED physicians, nurses definitely perceive as a dissatisfier in the workplace, as well as a huge issue contributing to morbidity and mortality in the emergency department. The other thing I want you to do is I'd like you to go to streetrx.com, wherever there's demand. It seems like there's a website to meet that demand. And so streetrx.com was designed for those people who are purchasing medications out in the street, obviously not without a prescription, and wanting to make sure that they pay an appropriate amount for the medications they buy. And so as you see, I typed in at the top left corner, Monterey County, and you see those various push pins, and those push pins represent purchases and how much individuals paid for their narcotics and other medications of abuse to make sure that they paid an appropriate price for those medications. Ironically, if we had looked at this map about 2 years ago when we started the initiative, you'd have seen a lot more pushpins further down south in the Monterey Bay Area where we're currently located. So we're happy that the majority of the pushpins in Northern California seem to be moving further north into Santa Cruz, Santa Clara, and San Francisco County. Let's look at it just one other way. This is information from recoverybrands.com, And what they're portraying here is the number of opiate prescriptions per 100 population arrayed by state. And so what this represents, it's at the low end, down in the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see that opiate pain medication prescriptions, about 52 prescriptions per 100 residents. That means in our lowest prescribing states, every resident of the state of California, for instance, roughly one half of every resident has received or would receive a prescription for pain medication next year. At the top end, you see it's 142.9. That's roughly 1.5 prescriptions for every resident of the state. And so you see there's pretty significant differences in opiate prescription across the United States. And in fact, if you keep with that thought, if you look at long-acting opiates, once again, very similar dispersion across the United States, with California, once again, being one of the lowest states in the nation from the standpoint of prescribing. If you then go within the state of California and begin to ask the question, how does Monterey County rank compared to the rest of California? There are 48 counties in the state of California, and as you see, Monterey is the 11th lowest prescriber of opiates per 100,000. The combined prescription of opiates and benzodiazepines were the 9th county out of 48, the 9th lowest county out of 48. And in fact, those individuals who on the state prescription monitoring program have identified more than 6 prescribers or 6 pharmacies in a single year, you see once again Monterey County in the lower quartile of counties within California. Well, the reason I talk about this is I believe we have a huge issue in Monterey County around this issue of prescription drug abuse, misuse, and diversion. As a matter of fact, in Monterey County, the most common cause of accidental death in Monterey County is not motor vehicle accidents. It's not industrial accidents. In fact, the most common cause of death is drug overdose from both illicit and prescription drug medications. And so even in one of the lowest prescribing areas in the United States, this is an issue. I would bet this is going to be an issue in your community as well. When you think about the face of addiction has changed pretty significantly. I think most of us still think of the images that you might see on television of the addict, destitute, out on the street, and in fact, that certainly is one caricature of the issue. But what you also see is the mother who has migraines and is just seeking some relief, and it starts innocently enough. By the same token, dealers are not like the dealers that we commonly think of. So down in the bottom right-hand corner, you see Al Pacino and Scarface. That certainly is the image of a dealer. But oftentimes, it's now your children who are getting the medications from their parents' medicine cabinets and other kinds of diversion of medications. So the face is changing of what we think about when we think about this crisis, when we think about what addiction looks like, when we think about what dealing or diverting medications looks like. It impacts all age ranges, all demographics. This is truly an epidemic in our country. So in February 2014, Montage Health made a decision, and the decision was pretty simple, that we wanted to be a catalyst for change in our community around this issue. And so we formed, as an anchor organization, we formed an interagency initiative that was designed to address the epidemic of controlled prescription medication misuse, abuse, and diversion in Monterey County. Now, you've heard me use those three terms, misuse, abuse, and diversion, a number of times. And so I just want to stop and give you a brief definition of each. Misuse is taking a medication in a manner other than it's prescribed. And so that might be extra doses of a medication or inadequate doses or upping the dose when it wasn't prescribed in that manner. Misuse really means in using it for an intent to achieve an effect other than what was intended by the prescriber. So if it's an opioid medication really prescribed to relieve pain and yet it's used for a more euphoric effect or another mind-altering effect, if it's a medication that's used for anxiety and it's used to calm people down other than for the purpose of anxiety, that's an example of abuse. And as you can imagine, there are a number of consequences of abuse to include intentional or unintentional death as a result of overdose or otherwise injury, impairment, so driving under the influence of medications can certainly result in injury and harm not only to the individual but to others around them, and workplace accidents certainly are a consequence of this. Addiction, not only impacting the individual as well as their family and social disruption. And then lastly, the cost, which is, of course, both monetary, the amount of cost for the delivery of health care associated with this, the loss of productivity in the workplace, but also an emotional cost as well. Diversion really has to do with selling drugs for some form of consideration. Not uncommonly, that consideration is selling drugs for money, as well as sex, as well as addicted prescribers who are seeking another source to be able to get medications, and sometimes they'll write prescriptions with the intent of the individual who is written for providing a portion of the prescription back to the prescriber so that they can help serve their addiction. And lastly, falsely acquiring prescription medications for personal use. And that's manifest in a number of different ways to include prescription fraud, so fraudulently altering a prescription or writing a prescription, insurance fraud, elder abuse, it's another form of elder abuse, stealing a vulnerable elderly person's medications to be used for personal consumption. And certainly there's a black market for MRIs and other studies to demonstrate the potential need to use these medications when you're seeking medications in the emergency department, et cetera. The good neighbor phenomenon is another example of diversion, although it's innocent enough. You know, the comment where someone will provide a narcotic medication to their friend saying, take a couple of these, they're safe, my doctor gave them to me. Sometimes that's an innocent act of providing medications as a good Samaritan, if you will, can really have an impact on someone's life. And then lastly, medication cabinet parties. Probably I'm of the generation where if children wanted to experiment, the thing they would do is go to the liquor cabinet and maybe take a little bit of liquor out of the out of their parents' cabinet. Well, the medicine cabinet is really now the next generation's liquor cabinet. And children know what they're looking for, oftentimes will take medications from their parents' or grandparents' medicine cabinet, if not secured, place them in a bowl in the middle of a room, and the children will take and consume those medications. And so this is a serious problem that once again impacts our communities in very different ways. So what role can hospitals play in trying to address this issue? And I think one of the first and most important things a community can do is really ask the question, what organizations, what resources are there in our community to begin to address this issue? Is there a coalition already formed, that we can join and maybe have, you know, a very specific role? Or do we need to be an anchor organization? This slide is a graphic that's in an excellent article put out by HRIT that's referenced. But what it looks at is a hospital considering both the degree of collaboration that they would like to have. And so is this an issue that you as a hospital would feel most comfortable addressing with your emergency room physicians only, as an example? Or is this something you'd like to take on with the broader community as well? And the scope of intervention. Is this a targeted intervention, for instance, implementing a very specific guideline within the emergency department, and that's what your role is in the community, very targeted scope of an intervention? Or are you interested in having a much broader, more cohesive and comprehensive approach to this problem, and are willing to address some of the public health issues, some of the community education issues, and other ways to address this problem? For our organizations, we chose to be an anchor organization. So as you see, we have a very broad coalition that we work with and have taken a very comprehensive approach over time to try to deal with the problem. So I mentioned that we, as an organization, chose to have a very broad view and a very and be the anchor organization. This is somewhat atypical for a hospital to be an anchor organization. Oftentimes, many of the coalitions, at least in California, are initiated by public health services or a public sector or private sector activities. What we see in California, for the most part, that's the approach with public health departments in major counties in California taking the lead. But in our county, we felt the provider side really had the opportunity to lead, and that's what we did. As you can see on this slide, the agencies include every hospital in Monterey County. We felt it was very, very important that if we were going to exhaust the behavior of people shopping different emergency departments, that we needed all four hospitals involved, engaged, and on the same page. Every major urgent care in Monterey County, the majority of the larger physician groups and primary care practices in Monterey County, as well as the County of Monterey, you can see the five departments that are involved. This goes beyond public health department and mental health, but really engages also the sheriff's department and the office of the district attorney, since once again, some of the diversion activities need to be addressed as well, and advocacy organizations such as our hospital council. We launched our initiative in February 2014. It was modeled after one of the very first initiatives in California, the San Diego Collaborative. And we met with them, and they were more than gracious to help us do and engage in some of the activities that they found fruitful. So they definitely led the way in California. We have what we call the big group. It's one leader or more from each of the organizations, the 15 organizations that I described earlier, who meet on a semi-annual basis to go over data, to be educated about the subject and opportunities that we may have, to develop the strategic direction of our organization, and to outline the role that each organization will take in trying to move that initiative forward. A good portion of the day-to-day operational work is done by a leadership group, which I call the Zealots. Two ED physicians who have lived with this issue for a long period of time, have seen the morbidity and mortality associated with inappropriate use of these medications, and who have a great desire to move this initiative forward and to decrease the burden on our emergency rooms and our providers. Also, a district attorney for disability and healthcare fraud has had a pivotal role, somebody you wouldn't usually think of as being part of a team to address this problem. I mostly try to help wrangle this group and keep them on track. We also have a number of just-in-time teams that form around specific initiatives Over the last couple of years, we've had several of these groups complete their tasks and disband. If you think about how we can best attack this issue, we use what we call key choke points. There are areas where we believe if we cut off the supply, decrease the demand, decrease the number of individuals distributing and engage in interdiction to prevent these things from happening, that we will have a greater opportunity to reduce the burden of these medications on the street. And so when you think about supply, it starts with the patient-physician relationship, and it starts with an objective complaint of pain, which oftentimes is very difficult to evaluate to begin with. And so as we look at this, we need to arm physicians in better understanding how they can have interactions with patients, feeling confident that they can have discussions about the relative merit of narcotics in chronic pain management in particular, and how we can move forward in that regard. Of course, once you do have people on these medications, patients have a predisposition to addiction. Oftentimes, it's a polypharmacy addiction involving not only narcotics, but benzodiazepines and other medications. And it's an issue that needs to be dealt with as the disease it is. And so or communities need to have adequate resources around addiction to be able to deal with those issues as well. Also on the demand side is what I call experimentation. So I go back to my example of the young high school student who takes medications out of his parents' medicine cabinet to experiment as part of experimentation. And sometimes, once again, it starts innocently enough, but can certainly lead to addiction. On the distribution side, we certainly have dealers who are working the streets, who come into the emergency department seeking medication that they can then resell out on the street. But we also have enablers, and the enablers are those individuals who receive narcotic medications, who don't safely store them, who don't dispose of them when they no longer need it, and the Good Samaritan that I talked about earlier that offers up their narcotic medications to others. From an interdiction standpoint, traditionally, we've thought about that as law enforcement going after the bad distributors who are out there carrying out illegal acts. But it's also a recognition that the public has an important role in this, not only from the standpoint of proper use of their medications, but proper storage and disposal, and also understanding the risks and benefits of narcotic medications and engaging in a meaningful discussion with their primary care physicians and other physicians around whether they need those medications or not. So let's talk about a few outcomes to date. Since starting our initiative in 2014, we've established emergency department medications prescribing guidelines that have been accepted and implemented in all four of Monterey County's hospitals. So every hospital, you can expect the same kind of approach to medication management in each hospital as you go across the county. We've actually tested that in a number of interesting ways and have demonstrated that the emergency departments are pretty good about sticking with the guidelines and exhausting the behavior of individuals coming in drug-seeking to the emergency department. We've also developed a robust ED care management program, a CHOMP, that I'm going to talk more about, so I'll bypass that for a moment. On the ambulatory side, we've developed similar guidelines on the ambulatory side. And in fact, in the hospital organizations, three hospital organizations that have implemented this, accounting for About 70 physicians in Monterey, primary care physicians in Monterey County, we've documented anywhere from a 50 to 60% reduction in narcotic prescription, and that has also carried over, we believe, to benzodiazepines and other medications. We also launched a website that you have the opportunity to review, as well as engage our primary care physician community and others in continuing continuing education, scholarly articles, really began to work with our primary care physicians and our emergency departments to identify those individuals who are unlawfully diverting medications. And so we've had multiple convictions in Monterey County for prescription fraud, as well as health insurance fraud, directly related to individuals inappropriately presenting to our emergency rooms with a clear intent of putting those medications out on the street. We've advocated at the state, local, and federal level on the issue, as well as provide a mentorship program for now 10 organizations as part of the California Healthcare Foundation. We've also participated in the National Medication Take Back Day event, along with our local police departments who take the lead, along with the DEA, on that issue. So I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about, in particular, our ED recurrent visitor program, which directly impacts this issue. We began looking at our recurrent visitors, people who recurrently come back to the emergency room. We'll talk about what that means in just a minute. And how do we more adequately meet their needs outside of the emergency problem, emergency department, particularly for those individuals who have chronic medical problems, and certainly for those people who present to the ED seeking refills of opiate and benzodiazepines for chronic medical problems. So we applied a traditional biopsychosocial approach to care management. We identified and engaged those individuals that were recurrent visitor, and we'll talk about the criteria that we use for getting into the program. Our goal is to remove barriers to appropriate care. That may be helping them achieve self-management. It may be establishing a primary care doctor, dealing with socioeconomic or payer issues that are impairing their ability to adhere to an appropriate treatment plan. The criteria for entering the program includes some data analytics about the frequency in which individuals present to the emergency room, and so we can identify individual patients that way. Also, the emergency room staff are excellent at identifying individuals who come in and use the emergency department more as a primary care office for non-emergent issues such as management of their hypertension or diabetes, seeking medication refills, and most importantly, seeking pain medication refills in our emergency department. We also deal with abusive or out-of-control behavior, and not uncommonly we get a referral from a pharmacy or an insurance company who, utilizing our system, have identified individuals who would fit this program. After screening the patient for being part of the program, there's an extensive review that the care management engages in, to include making contact with patient's family and providers, and they develop a plan of care, which is then reviewed by an advisory council. And that advisory council, we'll talk about the membership of that in just a moment, but the ultimate outcome is a plan of care that is reviewed with the patient and providers and family if they're available. The plan of care is loaded into the electronic health record, and it's available anytime the patient comes into the emergency room at our hospital. So the advisory committee includes emergency room physicians, addictionologists, the care managers, medical social work, as well as we occasionally engage health plans that have an interest in this issue as well, specifically for the patients, of course, that they cover as part of their membership. So here's some data looking at the outcomes of this this program. On the y-axis, you see the number of ED visits for our recurrent visitors. And I ignore the left side column for just a moment and look at the second column here in the middle. This is our emergency department recurrent visitor program 2013-14. And as you see, if we take a year prior to engaging in a care management program, and we say how many times did they present to the emergency room, we then intervene through the care manager program, and we look at a year afterwards. What has been our experience in the reduction of recurrent visitors coming to our emergency department? And as you see, we've had a 59% reduction in visits. You see that over the lifetime of this program in two different kind of states, it's resulted in 4,100 avoidable visits. And so a pretty substantial improvement over our prior performance, assuming people will continue to come back if unabated. Variable cost, very similar pattern. Recurrent visitor program demonstrated a 47% reduction in variable costs before and after care management. And as you can see, that amounts to a substantial amount of dollars avoided in cost for our community, for the payers, and for the hospital itself. It's particularly pertinent given the fact that, as you see, the largest proportion of our payer mix is Medi-Cal, which is the Medicaid program in the state of California, which, just as a reminder, California is the 48th lowest payer for hospital reimbursement of any state in the United States. And so, for the most part, the reimbursement for Medi-Cal patients do not cover the variable costs in most organizations. So what's our next steps? Our next steps is to engage in what we call critical event letters. That's taking a teachable moment for the physicians. If we have a patient that they've previously prescribed to, and they, and they present to the emergency room with a drug overdose, or they have a death and are seen by the coroner, who identified that the cause of death was related to medication overdose, or they have a charge filed by the DA's office for a felony drug conviction, then we use that teachable moment as an opportunity to send a letter to those physicians who have prescribed to that patient in a very non-punitive way, reminding them that this is a big issue in Monterey County, and guiding them to the call to action is guiding them to our webpage and other resources in the community that we have to help them deal with this issue when patients present. We also plan on expanding some of our chronic pain management and addiction services. We'd like to have permanent receptacles in our county to manage medication take back. We're engaging in a public awareness campaign. We're rounding out some of our data analytics. And then lastly, engaging in a countywide emergency department information system that will cue physicians at different hospitals when there's a plan of care associated with what would appear to be misuse, abuse, and diversion of medications. So what are your options? What can you do tomorrow to try to address this issue? Well, one, I gave you a litmus test that I think it's important for you to really look at how much of an issue this is in your community and make a choice about what role you would like to play given community resources that might and activities that might already be underway. I think it's important to find somebody who has a passion around this issue within your organization, whether you're going to take a more specialized approach or the anchor approach that we took. And then lastly, feel free to go to our website and others and adopt best practices. There's a lot out about this issue, not only on our website, but other websites where communities have shared freely what they're doing. And then, quite frankly, just a reminder that if you haven't started yet, you're kind of behind the game. Today's a good day to start and take action. So on my final notes, take-home message is really that this is a national epidemic with local implications. And once again, I think the first step of really you appreciating the impact that it's having on your community locally. The only way to really exhaust the behavior of individuals misusing, abusing, and diverting medications is to have the entire community pushing together or pulling together in the same direction at those choke points that I identified. And it's important to recognize that you're doing the right thing for your community because it's the right thing, but also there is a return on investment, as we demonstrated with our recurrent visitor program. And definitely this is one of those issues that I think many of your staff, particularly in the emergency room, will appreciate that you have the foresight to want to take on this issue and to be able to help them deal with this addiction. And lastly, it's very important that if you do this, you will get a few complaints coming out of your emergency room when your physicians say no to inappropriate prescribing. And it's important to have your physicians and your emergency departments back to really stick with the guidelines that have been established both in your organization and hopefully within a broader coalition that meet CDC and other organizations' national guidelines for prescribing, and feel comfortable that you're doing the right thing for your patients.
Thank you, Dr. Chavez, so much for your willingness to share your time, your experiences, and for being a leader in this field, and for really presenting this afternoon options where hospitals can significantly make a difference to improve access to care, reduce abuse, diversion, and hopefully, therefore, deaths. And I just want to thank you on behalf of the field and those who are on the line and online or on the phone. And any last words you would like to say?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity to participate, and I thank everyone who's listened.
Thank you so much. Operator, this concludes today's webinar.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation.